Good afternoon. So today is the 25th of July 2008, and I'm now sitting with Julie Fleming, who is Senior Advisor for the Community Safety Program of ECTAP, the International Criminal Investigative Training Assistance Program of the U.S. Department of Justice in Pristina, Kosovo. We are today in the restaurant at the top floor of the OSCE main office in Pristina, Kosovo. Well, first, thank you for your time. And before we start the interview, I'd like you to confirm that you've given your consent to the interview.
Yes, I have.
All right. Well, I'd like to start the interview by learning more about your personal background in policing and how did you get involved into overseas policing?
Okay. I began my law enforcement career in 1985 with the San Diego Police Department in California, in the United States. I was there 7 years and then moved to Oregon and became a police officer in Grants Pass, Oregon. Was there another 7 years and was promoted to captain and began working for the Oregon Department of Public Safety Standard and Training, which is a public safety academy in Monmouth, Oregon, and then became a police consultant and traveled the United States working with law enforcement agencies in their communities to help to improve their relations and their cooperation. During that time, I was always a law enforcement trainer most of my career, basic levels up to the top executive levels, both in an academy setting and in law enforcement agency and community settings. And throughout my whole career, my experience and expertise, my primary focus was in the areas of community policing. The philosophy of the police and the community and local governments working together to be able to identify and address issues of crime, safety, livability, and security. I also was a program manager for one of the United States regional community policing institutes called the Western Community Policing Center, also in Oregon, and traveled 6 Western states assisting law enforcement agencies in their community policing implementation and training and capacity building. As such, I was invited to come to Kosovo in 2003 with a team of community policing experts to implement a similar program in Kosovo that we had successfully implemented throughout the United States. There we called it community teams. Here we call it community safety action teams, which is a name that the Kosovo people actually created for themselves. And the idea was Mr. Steve Bennett, who was the director of the Kosovo Police Service School at the time, had just created the 7,000 strong Kosovo Police Service and trained them in democratic policing. But he had a vision to really show the police officers in Kosovo what democratic policing looks like in practical application in the communities, on the ground, in the neighborhoods. And he knew from his experience in Oregon that one of the best ways to do that is through the philosophy of community policing. So he brought this team together. He invited this team to come to Kosovo and to develop a program to bring the officers more closely together with their communities and their local governments.
Was this an international team, or was it composed only of U.S. officers?
All U.S. officers. It was funded by the U.S. Department of Justice, ICITAP. We started working a pilot program in 4 municipalities to create teams of police officers, community leaders, and municipal officials to be able to work together cooperatively, democratically, to reduce crime and increase safety through proactive problem solving, prevention, working in partnership. That's what brought me to Kosovo, and that's primarily my law enforcement career up to the point of coming to Kosovo. There's a lot of work that's been done since from then to now.
How big was the team originally?
There were 5 of us. There were 5 of us. One team leader who was a civilian, and for community policing law enforcement professionals. Two of them were chiefs of police. One was a retired deputy chief, and then me. I don't want to give you too much more till you ask. Okay.
So that was the pilot program. Mm-hmm. And how long did this last? Can you?
It's now become a hugely successful and comprehensive community safety program since 2003, with a lot of components.
Okay. But to start with, back then, the four municipalities, how were they selected, and how was the program designed and implemented at the time?
I'll get you some electronic information to help fill in the gaps, but what we did is we chose communities with specific criteria. They had to agree to work cooperatively together, the police and the municipality and police together with their community. They were required to work with their minorities, women, NGOs, youth, collaboratively. They had to be, they would be considered a future model for other agencies, so they had to be ethical and being run democratically. And they needed to not already have taken in so many resources from the international community, because we wanted this really to be a grassroots effort, something that could be built from the ground level on. These four communities, doesn't matter where they are.
Sure, if you...
Fushkasova, Kosovo Polje, Jakova, Dakovika, Vushtri Vuchitrin, and Novo Brdo were the first four. Each team, each community safety action team, we'll now call CSATs, was created in the community. We started by the community selection. Once we selected the community, we met with the municipal mayors and the KPS station commanders, showed them about the project, the importance of the project, what the goals and objectives of the project. Once we got their buy-in, then we put together a recruitment committee representing police, municipal leader, community leader, and minority leader to recruit for their CSATS team. And they recruited in their areas of responsibility, community leaders. So they could be, the municipal recruiter would recruit from the municipality, and it could be directors of emergency services, directors of social welfare, director of schools, anything that was related to community safety, but they needed to be leaders. They needed to already have some proven success as leaders in impacting community safety issues. The community leader would identify community leaders. So it could be business owners, it could be NGO leaders, it could be clergy, media, journalists, people who are already working within the realm of community safety and wanting to make a difference in their society. This was post-conflict society, so this very democratic grassroots approach was brand new, and we needed people that had an innate sense of empowerment and democracy and being proactive. And then the police recruiter would, of course, recruit the police officers. Generally, there would be community policing officers, patrol officers, detectives, first-line supervisors. In some cases, they were higher-ranking officers, but mostly they were street officers involved. And then the minority leader would make sure that the team represented the diversity of their community. So if you had 10% minorities, then your team had to have 10% minorities on the team. So all of the teams reflect the diversity of their communities. This is another one of the criteria. So once they were recruited, then we went out into the community and we gave them a 3 or 4 hour orientation. All the new CSATS members, along with the municipal mayor and KPS station commander, and we let them know about the program. We let them know about community policing, about working together, partnerships, problem solving, working preventively, what their purpose is, what their responsibilities were as CSATS members. It's fully voluntary, but is very proactive. So the expectation is that these relationships and this team would be long-term. And then we built them up to to go through the program. It's actually a 12-week comprehensive training program that they go through. And everything we do via tell, show, do. So we tell them about it, and we show them what it looks like, and then we give them the opportunity to do it. So as you hear the phases of the program, you'll see where we've given them the opportunity in every capacity. So once they've gone through the orientation, then and the people who were recruited were approved to be part of the team because they have to be supported by the police and the municipality as well.
So at the time, the international police, UNMIC, still had an executive authority.
Mm-hmm.
How were the KPS officers recruited? Was it completely run by KPS officers, the whole process?
Completely. It was a completely grassroots effort and on purpose because we wanted it sustainable, whether UNMIC was here or not, whether we were here or not. We wanted it fully sustainable. So actually there were no internationals involved outside of us. Except later in the game as partners to work on issues relating to community safety, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. So we brought them, we needed to bring them to a place of safety because we brought minorities and women and young people together in an environment they'd never done before. Some of them had post-conflict issues, traumas, misperceptions, misunderstandings, miscommunication, and we had to build them up as a team. The perfect place to do that was, at the time, the Kosovo Police Service School in Voštivočin, because since 1999 there were no incidents of violence on campus. It was where all of the police officers had been trained up to that point, and they opened their doors to bringing in municipal and community leaders as well in this training, and this has been the training site for us and this program ever since. It's been a really good experience for them to be able to work together vulnerably but without risk, and it's a safe zone, it's a neutral zone for everybody. So we bring all the new CSATS members here for three comprehensive days, and we spend the whole day, 3 days, breaking down barriers, perceptions, building them up as a team. We teach them about democracy and consensus and group development and dealing with difficult situations and really building them up because they're so diverse. We want to build them up as one cohesive team with one goal. They write their mission statement, and their mission statement, their goal is always that their role and responsibility is to improve, to reduce crime and increase safety in their community together with the community.
So how many of the first group, how many members of the municipality, the community leaders, and KPS were part of the first?
About 40 per team.
40
yeah.
per team, so per village, I understand.
Mm-hmm. These are
one team per village.
When I say municipality, it's like our cities back home. So like the city of San Diego would have one team.
Okay.
So the city of Ushtri had one team of about 40 people.
Okay.
And the makeup is about 25% police, 25% municipality, and 50% community is generally the makeup of each of these teams.
During the 3 days, they were staying on
campus.
On site,
mm-hmm.
So sleeping over.
Yes, okay. Exactly. They sleep there, they eat there, they train there, they have their free time there, and it really helped to build them up as a team.
And the only incentive for the program there was no per diem, it was only food
lodging,
and board.
Exactly, and transportation.
Okay.
And we didn't transport them in the middle of the training, only the first day and the last day. So really their motivation was their own civic initiative, their own willingness to participate and be part of something important. And it was life-changing for every student since then. Really, it's been an amazing experience. So after the 3 days, we send them back out into the community, and in the training we teach them how to put together a community meeting so they can bring people from all facets of the community to come together so that they can share the information about what it is that they're doing and who they are as a CSATS, but also to gain information from the community about their concerns and issues in relation to crime and safety. So they gather, we help them to facilitate, but they really take it over, facilitate this meeting to
weekly.
Gain. They only do it once when they, in the formal training program, they do it once. Sometimes they have as many as 200 people that come to the community meetings. And Again, it's all voluntary. All we do is provide snacks, you know, chips and cookies and juice and water. And they gather information from the community, and they get a whole list of concerns, crime, safety, livability, sometimes infrastructure, unemployment. They get the list of concerns, and then they work together through a democratic process so they can see it live and in action in the community. They prioritize those concerns to their top four or five. Then we bring the team and we bring them. Go ahead.
So I'm curious, what were some of the concerns that were prioritized by the groups?
The concerns were everywhere from prostitution and trafficking of human beings to illegal wood cutting, stray dogs, lack of street lighting, unemployment, drugs in schools, fear of the police, you name it. Really, the gamut was all the way across the board.
And different priorities for different communities as
exactly,
well.
Exactly. In the smaller the community, the more infrastructure concerns there were. Lack of electricity, lack of running water, lack of clean drinking water. A lot of environmental issues ended up on the top of the agenda, which is really encouraging for us because you see the environment that they've been living in. And so they prioritize those concerns, and we take them back to the school, now called CAPSED, Kosovo Center for Public Safety Education and Development, so we should call it CAPSED now, or the center. We take them back to the school, the center, and we walk them through another 3 days of a problem-solving process. So we teach them how to go through SARA, which is an acronym and a problem-solving model that we've used all over the world. It's fairly simple.
How do you spell it?
Makes sense. It's S-A-R-A, mm-hmm. And it stands for scanning, analysis, response, and assessment. And all it is a problem-solving model that helps people to be able to take a problem and walk it through a true analysis to get to the underlying conditions of the problem, the cause of the problem, before they respond. Because so often there's a problem like stray dogs, and they go, okay, we'll get the hunting club and the police and the municipality to work together, and we go kill the dogs, and problem solved for about a week. And then it comes up again. So we really look at the underlying conditions. And so they took those problems that they got from the community in the classroom, and we walk them through this process, and they work in sub-teams, four or five sub-teams, and we always have police within each team, municipal in each team, community in each team. And we walk them through this process to develop a project action plan to be able to implement in their communities. The problems that they've taken on, we talked a little bit about, but the one thing that we really focus on is not only the underlying conditions, but that they have to address several components of the crime. They have to address the location, they have to address the victim, and they have to address the offender. Because if they don't impact, it's a crime triangle, and if they don't impact all three sides of the triangle, it's just a temporary solution. You take your gangsters out of your park, and you don't do anything to change the park, and you don't do anything to change the mentality of the victims, the bad guys just come back in. So we trained them how to problem solve these things so that they change the makeup of the park and they improve the lighting and they clean it up and they actually bring families in to use the park. Bad guys don't like to be around the families. And then we change the mentality of the victims, take back their parks, ownership, empowerment, all the buzzwords.
Among the concerns, you did not mention interethnic. Were there any in the mixed communities?
Freedom of movement was a big issue. Freedom of movement, interethnic cooperation. A lot of the projects focused on bringing the multi-ethnic youth together, and because you know the population, I think 80% of the population is under the age of 25. So if we don't focus on the youth, of course the future is bleak. So a lot of them went to youth. A lot of the environmental projects were about bringing the majority minority communities together for a common goal, common purpose, whether it's quality of life, safety, freedom of movement, livability, and then it didn't matter the ethnicity. What's also interesting is the byproduct of some of these projects, even if they weren't intended to be multi-ethnic, they were multi-ethnic because of the makeup of the team, but there was a byproduct was inter-ethnic reconciliation. We saw a lot of it, and now it's much more focused. in some communities where there's new returns, they want to reintegrate the newly returned minorities, they'll implement a project to reintegrate through addressing an environmental issue. Vushi Vuchichin put together a project called Road to Integration, and it was just a paved road that connected two villages, one Ashkali Roma and the other Albanian, that connected two villages. And by bringing them together for this one common project, then it started building relationships, started building a history with the two communities, and they're able to work more closely together. So, yes. The next step is, and we're almost through the phases, once they go through the problem-solving training, then we take them back into the community, and they actually start to implement their project action plans to implement solutions to the problems. They have to bring in more stakeholders. They have to bring in other partners. They may have to gather additional information about the problem. If it's drugs in schools, they may have to do a survey in the schools to find out how bad the problem is, what's the drug of choice. What are the regulations? Do they protect the youth? Can they search lockers? You know, so they have to do a lot of research. They implement the projects, and they bring the community back together, and they do this on their own. All we do is watch. They do another community meeting, and they report back to the community the work that they're doing and the progress that they've made on the projects. And then the community now has an opportunity then to assist. It's a big environmental cleanup. They can volunteer at that point. Maybe they're doing traffic safety where they have to pour concrete. Maybe a local concrete layer can offer the services of his employees to lay the concrete for traffic sidewalks near the schools, something like that. And they actually do an official graduation at that point, just showing that they had survived about 9 weeks with us. And then they continue to work together virtually forever as a team. They implement these projects, they take on new projects, they do other community meetings, they meet new people, they train new people for their teams. It's really an amazing, amazing project. Right now we have 20 CSATS teams in 20 municipalities, 20 cities, with over 800 Kosovars involved, fully as volunteers. It's very difficult for us to keep track of them all. So every team, every CSATS, before they leave their formal training, identify two leaders that represent them as our liaisons to the team and their voice from the team to us. And they'll represent their team in many capacities, whether it's training, whether it's meetings, whether it's meeting with ministry regarding, you know, central government regarding issues. We've had our leaders travel to other countries and train other communities and other police officers in this area. So they really are a very active group.
Which countries?
Albania, yeah. Primarily Macedonia, Serbia. We've done, actually most of the Serbian work at this point has been with internationals, but we're getting more cooperation all the time. And we get countries calling us regularly to be able to implement similar projects in their countries, all over Southeastern Europe for sure, but also places like Northern Ireland, where they monitored us for 2 years and then was able to implement a similar project there to bring their communities and police together. Other areas have created teams like ours and like of ours, and then we continue to add additional training for them.
So after the 12 weeks program, mm-hmm. how do you evaluate the program and its impact at the end of it?
We did a formal lessons learned immediately after each of the programs, but it was really more of an on-the-ground evaluation. We met with every one of the teams within a month's time to determine their progress, to continue to mentor and support them, and be able to see where there might be gaps, either in the training or in our work, to be able to improve it. We also met with the program team at the end of every formal program to find out what's worked, what didn't work, how we can improve it. So the program has evolved year after year with each delivery, but a formal impact assessment was never done. So we initiated a self-initiated participatory impact assessment a year and a half ago. And this was a huge undertaking because we didn't have staff or budget to do it. But the OSCE provided a consultant to come in and assist, and with team members went out into the field and really did an excellent job gathering information for the impact assessment. It's just now going through the final editing, and we anticipate it'll go to print. It has to go through translation and everything, but it'll go to print in the next few months, so you're more than welcome to a copy of it. And the impact assessment showed the long-term impacts that this program has had in several areas. One is particularly freedom of movement, multi-ethnic relationships, the relationship between the police and the community, traffic safety, and environmental. But what we allowed them to do is identify those focal areas that they felt had the greatest impact, and in fact they did. But you'll see the projects, there's hundreds of projects, and the impact of those projects in that capacity is really difficult to track. So we probably have great impact in other areas, we just didn't focus in those. And we also identified gaps. One of the difficulties is getting the teams to be able to work together, because a lot of the problems that are an issue in one community are an issue in another. And how do we bring the communities together when communication is so poor just across also the period because of technology not being able to pay for the phone cards and those kinds of things. So it identified some gaps in there. How do we get the communities, the CSAS, to be able to communicate with each other? If a team has identified leadership and that leadership moves or that leadership ends up going in a different direction, they lose their coordination. So how do we make sure that we always have good coordination amongst the team? Those kinds of things. So we'll be modifying the program based on those.
So we're 5 years down the road from the pilot programs of the first four municipalities. You're mentioning the big turnout, aside from the new participant, but also from the community who would attend. One issue we've seen in other countries with these community forums is that if there are no major problems, the attendance sort of fades away.
Apathy.
What has happened five years down the road?
We haven't seen.
And how often do they meet? Also,
we don't regulate them at all. We don't. In fact, I'll tell you two components of the program which will help to answer this question. The two leaders from each team we meet with quarterly. So four times a year we meet with these two leaders, and the two leaders from each team, now there's 40 total, make up what they've called the CSAT's Executive Council. And so four times a year the leaders from each team come together and they're able to share information and resources, they're able to share successes, they're able to coordinate efforts and that kind of stuff. So this has really helped the leadership to stay informed, stay motivated, and to continue to inform the teams. But one of the other issues is apathy. We had this problem at home. We can rally people together if a kid just got killed in a crosswalk by a drunk driver, but then what happens afterwards? And really what they've done is, and there's always some rotation, but what they do is they take on projects as they see fit. And their projects are so broad that that they really always can have something attention to it. Like ours are generally crime related. And so you have a big crime spree, burglary, something like that, then we respond to that. Here it could be cleanup of a park or building a cultural center or putting street lights up or domestic violence. There's just so many areas that need work, so many areas where community awareness is lacking. But you'll see the teams will go, because they're very fluid, they don't stay in their sub-teams, they're very fluid, so maybe one CSATs is leading a project over here with all community members and police officers. 10 CSATs or 20 CSATs on the team are working on this. So it's they're self-motivated. You know, that because they're leaders, they're involved in this stuff anyway, it just provides additional resources. This is the difference between this program and any other program I've heard of. It's community-driven with the police and the local government, but it's community-driven. So they don't have to wait for the police officer to contact them. They don't have to wait for the municipal official or our city councilor or whatever to rally the community together. It's purely grassroots. Anybody can take lead at any time on a project. I think that helped to make a big difference. The other thing is they're not politically motivated. This was a huge lesson for us because you see after elections, the whole political party switched. Now, when that happens in our country, it's big enough, but the basic community isn't impacted here. everything changes. The whole leadership structure changes, and everybody starts over. But the CSATs don't have to do that because they're not motivated by politics. They're not run by politics. They're not regulated by politics. So even though the mayor may change and the whole municipality, they're there as community members, whether they're police officers, municipal leaders, or whatever. So they stay involved and fluid.
But municipal leaders will change if there is a change in
absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What was the impact of the parallel elections that were run in some communities where there was Serbian ethnic groups?
For the CSATs, the election, very little. The impact that the last few months has had on the CSATs is that all of them are diverse teams, and they've established really good relations with their multi-ethnic communities. And, I mean, everybody was working together. And for political reasons and because of media scares, et cetera, some people had to retreat from their activities, CSATs activities, and this was a huge problem. So a lot of the teams, some of the teams have rallied together to focus in those communities that retracted, whether it's an environmental issue or a school workshop or something, to try and get them reintegrated. We have other CSATs, you know, the police officers, Serbian police officers walked off the job after independence.
I remember them.
Yeah, and some of our CSATs were able to bring them back on the job because they had good relations with them. As far as the elections, virtually no impact that I'm aware of at all. But certainly the tensions since February 17th have had some impact. Like some of our trainers, a lot of our trainers are minorities, and some of our Serbian trainers, some of our best trainers, have had to decline training for us just during this time because it wasn't safe for them. Whether it's perception or reality, I don't know, but it wasn't safe for them.
You said that 60 trainers have been trained, so the program continues to expand to more municipalities. You have 20 right now. Mm-hmm. Are the program still run in the Vushtri Center?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So every community that has a CSATs is still functioning since 2003. And what happens is some people will rotate out. Let's say if we have youth and they go off to university or some person goes off somewhere else and they're not able to stay as actively involved, the teams recruit new team members. And it used to be they would have to come and we'd train them. But now because we have all the trained trainers, we're going to be able to train their new CSATs members in their communities. They don't have to go through the 9 or 12-week program because they already have a sound team. They just need to get the information about working in partnership, problem solving, how to do the SARA problem solving model, because they'll go and work within a team that's already really experienced. And that's how they're able to get fresh blood, fresh energy, get more youth involved. Some teams were recruited because they thought that's what that team needed. And then after the team worked together for a few years, realized, man, we're really lacking in women. We're really lacking in youth. And so they can bring in as many or as diverse team members as they want because they're not regulated. So the goal is to have a CSATs in every municipality in Kosovo. There's right now 32.
So if the program is still using the Vushtri Center, so there's some kind of implicit support of the new institutions of Kosovo.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. In fact, really, we've been lucky to have their support since day one. And the current leadership of the center is really, really supportive. They provide the training for they provide the transportation for the students. They provide the classroom, the lodging. The only thing we pay for are the meals and our training materials. Whenever we have meetings, we can meet there. Whenever some of our CSATs have projects, multi-ethnic youth camp, like Handicoast is a disabled organization within Kosovo. They want to run their Olympics, and the CSATs are involved in that. They're able to do it at the center. They've really been supportive since day one about these efforts. Because the other law enforcement agencies or the other first responding agencies are now working more closely together through the center, our teams are reflecting the same. There's more corrections or border officers or customs officers involved in the teams of the border towns, because they realize now the importance of having those, where in the first year we wouldn't have had a clue. So it's really, yeah, it's amazing.
And once the 12 weeks training program is completed, there's virtually no cost associated with the running of the program, at the exception of when you bring on a quarterly basis the
Exactly. And then all we do, they host it, they do everything. All we do is provide the lunch. It's a full day. So we provide the lunch for them. And then the OSC provides transportation for those who are not nearby. Because each CSATS will host one of the quarterly meetings. So they're no longer at Vushti unless people choose to. They'll be, you know, Rahovets will host one in September, and then Dragas will host one in you know, March or whatever. So, yeah, we just pick up the lunch.
And aside from the Declaration of Independence-related slash political issues of some of the Serbian ethnic members of the community not participating any longer, attrition has been has attrition been
really low. In fact, we've only lost since 2003. We've only lost two CSATS Executive Council members, which is amazing. The leadership really has stayed, and they're fully voluntary. They don't get paid a dime. Like the trainers, now we're able to provide a very small stipend, but we've only been able to do that this last year. But the Executive Council is fully voluntary. And like I said, we've only lost two that I can recall, and one of them because he took a position here in the ministry. So it was kind of nice.
How did the Kosovo police, the former KPS, now the Kosovo police, since the new police law, has a department of community policing under the operations pillar, if I'm not mistaken. How does this relate to this program, and what is your involvement with the at the headquarters level with the community police?
Good questions. There's actually two departments now that are related. One is the KP Community Policing Unit at the HQ level, you're right. And the other one is the KP Community Affairs Department. We've worked with both of the units since their inception, so I think since their inception for community policing. So we have some thoughts on, I have some thoughts on this. They have community policing officers throughout Kosovo, and we found early on that the most well-trained advanced police officers in Kosovo in the areas of community policing were those who were on our CSATS teams, because they had such extensive training. But then they're working with other officers on the street, particularly community policing officers, and no training, virtually no training. And a lot of the officers were sent to community policing without any real support of how to do it, even at the supervisory and management level, how to even evaluate them, how to supervise them, how to motivate them. So we developed a two-week community
Do you know the rationale for the creation of this units? Was it a UNMIC-led process, or to your knowledge?
Well, it was all run
because community
UNMIC
policing.
Time,
community
yeah.
policing is a concept that has been brought about as for the whole police force, right? Yeah. Police for the people, and people as the police.
Exactly.
But how was the idea of an actual department? Do you recall?
Or? I came in just after that had happened, and it was internationally run originally, and then it was transitioned to locals. I think around. It's still being advised by UNMIC, the community policing unit. So there hasn't been a huge transition. But yeah, I think it was more an UNMIC initiative.
You developed the 2 weeks course.
Yeah, but I got off track, so it's better that we do it this way. The community policing unit has leadership that's responsible for providing liaisonship, coordination, support to community policing units throughout Kosovo.
Who are within the police stations.
Exactly. So their direct line supervisor is within the station and then within the region. But the community policing unit at the HQ level is supposed to be kind of a liaison, coordinating, helping to support projects, et cetera, et cetera. That's never happened. It's failed. And so in the last few years, we've tried to provide as much support to this unit as possible. UNMIC is working in the mentoring, advising role in this. They bring in really motivated advisors, but with no community policing experience, so they've never been able to move them to the next level. There was very little coordination in the communities from HQ and vice versa. It's become more of a paper-pushing process. Officers are writing up projects or activities. It goes to HQ. It gets stuffed in a drawer, and that's it. So we've tried to work with them to increase the relations between the officers in the unit, all with support from UNMIC, but we're...
So the KP officers that had participated in your CSAT program, CSAT's program, were mainly at the local level, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were not the ones at HQ.
No. But we did, once we developed the advanced community policing course, required that all of the community policing unit go through the advanced community policing course. It's 2 weeks. We started it just a few years ago. Now every single community policing officer within KP is trained through this advanced. And this advanced course was developed from the Community Safety Action Team's course and then additional areas as well. So the CSATs and the police are all hearing the same thing. They're working the same problem-solving models. They know how to put together the project proposals. They're being trained to do the community meetings and debates, all the same thing. Every officer that was trained in the advanced was introduced to their community safety, their CSATs in their community. So now this one officer who's taking on problem-solving projects and the CSATs taking on problem-solving projects, probably they're the same. So now this officer has 40 more people to assist in the process, and they get much more coordination at the community level. Problem is that community policing is still in the same problem because they're under the leadership of UNMIC, who doesn't know how to move them forward. So one of the generals created the KP Community Affairs Department, run by Lieutenant Colonel Naeem Reja. And we insisted at the creation of this unit that every one of them be trained through the Advanced Community Policing course, and that we get them out into the grassroots, working with the officers, getting to know the CSATs, seeing the work that's going on. And they've just started in the last few months, and already they're making progress. The problem is that we tried to convince them to put community policing unit under the community affairs department so that there was, because so much of the work is the same. Somebody in their infinite wisdom kept them separate. So
right now they're two different structures. Community affairs is also under operations, so it's community policing, right? But it's two different departments.
Yeah. But they're both under,
Operations pillar.
I think so. Under different chains is the problem. But luckily, the leadership from both are willing to work together and support each other, but they really need support. This is where EULEX comes in. We've been their primary advisors as best we can, but we have other mandates. We have other responsibilities, so really it's a hit and miss. So we work a lot with the officers on the grassroots level with their projects and support them and provide additional training or mentoring if we can. But EULEX has brought in advisors to help, and so far, number one, they haven't been able to kick off, and two, they have limited experience in this area, so we'll continue to stay involved in both these departments to assist any way we can.
So can you describe what this advanced community policing course is like? Mm-hmm. And is it just another course in the Vushtri Center now that is offered to police?
Mm-hmm. We wrote it, and both ISATAP
and OSCE.
And OSCE.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We wrote it, and we trained it for the first few years, and then our CSATs trained trainers started training about 50% of the course, and then our ISATAP team started training the other 50%, because some of what advanced community policing officers are getting is more extensive than what the CSATs are getting. They have more conflict resolution, more facilitation. They have a whole section on communication skills. We didn't need that with the CSATs as much because we were building them as a team and then taught them how to communicate with each other, but this is more about how they communicate with the community. So now it's fully locally trained, and it's all done at the center. KP has taken over the course, so it's officially theirs, but they don't have the capacity within the center to train it yet. We have police officers in the field. So what we do is we have a CSATS trained trainer who's a police officer working with a CSATS trained trainer who's a municipal or community leader, and we have two, those working together in the training. How are you? I'm getting recorded. So that's also helping to build the relations. And we're finding more and more now that our officers are involved in the CSATs and the work in the communities. But now they're all trained, so we're going more into patrol and supervisors. The other thing we had to do is we had to additionally train mid-managers in community policing, and we had to work more closely with the KPS station commanders. We've trained all of the KPS station commanders in the areas of problem solving, partnerships, prevention, we didn't go into in-depth about how to supervise their officers, but the whole philosophy and why they need to be working proactively and transparently instead of just reactively. We've trained all the municipal mayors that were here up until this last year. Once they switched over, we trained, we put on a training for all the new mayors and KPS station commanders as well, same thing, about the CSATs, about the work of the community policing, about the philosophy and how they can work together, about the community affairs department and other forums that are involved in community safety initiatives.
There's been an attempt since 2006 to create a more external oversight. For the police, with the police inspectorate, that is under the Ministry of Internal Affairs. How does your activity relate to the building of oversight mechanisms that are at least external oversight and accountability to the communities?
The police inspector is doing an excellent job, and there's a place for them. The only real connection that they have is what we've seen even back home is that when we bring the community and the police to work together on issues of crime, safety, and security, they become more transparent, more responsible, and more accountable to the community. So we personally have never gotten a single complaint of police officers on the street with problems. Police inspector, it is investigating problems, of course. But I think that we've been able to prevent a lot of those kinds of investigations because of the relationships that are being built at the grassroots level. The other thing is, through community policing officers, when they're building up relationships with the communities and local government, is that because the trust is improved or increased, people are more likely to report incidents or crimes or misconduct of police officers. And the other thing is that a lot of the teams are working really hard in community awareness campaigns, and they're all in the areas of reducing crime and increasing safety and increasing reporting where needed. Domestic violence, traffic incidents, drugs, hooliganism, and there's always a community awareness component, and in that component is always, look, if you see something you need to report, or look, you need to come to us and let's work together to be able to do it. One of the projects that we're working on with the minister's office right now is called Bridging the Gap, and it's being headed up with our CSATs to go out into the minority villages and communities and bring police officers with the communities and to discuss it. We'll have a leaflet with lots of information about policy and procedure and how to respond if you're pulled over, what to do if you're stopped by the police, what are the rights and responsibilities of the police, and really just to provide some basic information to the citizen about what their rights are. And then follow it up with community debates where police, the Minister of Internal Affairs office, and us and the local municipality all come together, and the community can then say, yeah, well, you know what, when I got pulled over, this happened. Did the officer have a right to do that? Or what happens when I see a kid out in front of the school and I know he's smoking marijuana, or if I'm harassed by a whatever? And so they're building the relationships that way as well. This is a new project. Our CSATs have done similar projects like this several times over the years. So I think that's where it's making the greatest impact, mostly through prevention and reporting and the cooperation between the police and the community.
You mentioned the leaflets. Mm-hmm. What are the other vehicles you're using for community awareness campaigns? How do you reach the communities?
Yeah, mostly it's really in the communities, in the villages. They bring people together through community debates and community meetings because we've trained them to do this. They're comfortable in doing this. They get a good response. We've done a few leaflets that help, but it's always part of a project, whether it's around traffic safety, and we get a lot of volunteers involved in creating a safe zone outside the schools with, you know, the pedestrian crossing, the signs and the poles and the sidewalks and everything, and then the brochures come with that as an additional piece. We always invite the media when we're involved in projects, but, you know, the CSETs implement their projects on their own, so they generally call in their local media to get involved. We haven't done a lot of that. One of the things that OSC is really strong in is doing community awareness campaigns, but there's just so much going on out there that there hasn't been this huge connection yet.
Are there any worries about the politicization of the Kosovo police?
At the upper level only, really. And I think those are the biggest problems with KP right now is the upper echelon with old school mentality. And so we spend a lot of time supporting the officers from the grassroots up to the station commander level, and then the officers like Lieutenant Colonel Naeem and some other really good, solid democratic leaders, so that through attrition, when that leadership goes, which may be the only way to depoliticize it, that they'll be strong enough and capable enough to take over.
Has petty corruption come up as an issue at the local level?
Never in our program project. And really, this is surprising because their pay is fairly low, their benefits are zero. But yeah, never in 5 years have I received a single complaint of corruption, even petty corruption. Now, I'm sure it exists. Yeah. But compared to Macedonia and Albania and some of the other countries we work with, absolutely not.
Well, we focus a lot on community policing, but as a police officer yourself, and having been here for many years, you've seen the building of the Kosovo Police more in general. So now I'd like to look at the whole process and ask you what, in your opinion, are the broader challenges and maybe the priorities at this point.
Well, I'll stay on community policing just for about 2 minutes. One is that we really need CSATs in every community because this is building the grassroots foundation of democracy Kosovo-wide, and we have ensured that politics play no part in their efforts, and we make that very clear from the very beginning. And so that's a priority goal for us.
Is there a target year? At the rate it is going?
We're doing 8 a year now, and there's 12 more municipalities, plus we have pilot municipalities coming up. If we got additional staffing and resources, we could do more. But right now, we're only doing 8 a year. In fact, 4 a year. So we have 12 more to go. So we really need 2 to 3 years, depending on staffing and resources. But as you can see, their sustainability is not in question. It's a matter of having one in every municipality, so they have that foundation to draw from. Another issue for Kosovo is that they need to streamline. They need to make community policing a full department philosophy, that everybody is working transparently and closely with the communities. There's always a place for units because there's special areas of focus, whether it's investigations, community awareness campaigns, special events on the weekends, but it really needs to be top down, bottom up. For Kosovo, I think there's a couple of huge challenges. One is corruption. It's quite frankly my biggest concern in Kosovo is corruption.
In what form?
Primarily in government and upper-level KP. But we work very closely
based
with...
Based on type of corruption, based on political allegiance from former, or
yeah.
Is not money corruption, or organized crime, or... When we talk about corruption, it can be interpreted as many.
Yeah. Corruption first, organized crime second. I think in the government, we work with really great democratic leaders, particularly within the Minister of Internal Affairs office and some of the other ministries. But they're having to work within a system that's probably fairly corrupt. And then KP, really, it's abuse of power. And really, it's abuse of power and control more than anything. Organized crime is more of across the wide issue because of the unemployment. You know, I mean, it's just kind of, our country came from this as well. You know, that's where the money is and that's where the influence is. But we're lucky. We're able to impact organized crime at the community level in small pieces by addressing issues of trafficking or prostitution or drugs, smuggling. Our teams are working on all those issues, but we try and get them to focus in the real narrow, their area of influence, which is their community, not up here because it's too big. We don't take on world hunger in our community. We take on feeding the hungry in our community. Unemployment is huge, but they're finding a way. They're finding a way to take care of each other. And this is amazing. One of the most amazing things I've seen in Kosovo that we would never see back home is to have 80% of a population under the age of 25 with 60%+ unemployment, whatever the rates are now, and not have rampant violence and gangs and rioting and looting. You don't have it. And the hooliganism, they call it here, is an emerging problem, but it's still very, very low scale, very small scale. It will continue to grow as they westernize, but a lot of our teams are working on that, so they're addressing it at all different levels. But I think because they have this strength in family, and if they can find a way, and if there's somebody, because it's not our area, find a way to build up those families and preserve the family unit, family structure, they'll be able to really keep their crime rates down, because you know their crime rates are nothing compared to ours back home. Really. I don't even know the statistics now, but it's nothing. Our unemployment is 5%. People are, you know, it's like, oh, how are we going to survive this? And theirs, I'm sure, is around 65% right now. The other thing is Western countries are bringing, I don't know what it's called, they're deporting people who had fled during the conflict or the war to these other countries, and now because they consider them stable and have freedom of movement, they're forcing them back in, but there's no jobs for these people. So those are probably my biggest
returnees.
Mm-hmm. But they're not necessarily minority returnees, which they call IDPs, internally displaced persons, but yeah, returning families with no jobs.
We talked about the underlying political economic condition. Your pilot project and is a bigger project, is in itself an interesting experiment, innovation. Are there any others that you know of that you think are merit attention, either led by the international community or maybe also initiated by the Kosovo themselves?
Yeah, this is unique for post-conflict society, but even for the United States. And because it's a smaller country and there's fewer people, less than 2 million, we've been able to do this. And we're seeing more and more smaller post-conflict societies doing the same thing, but it's very innovative. And that is that we use the triangle as an example, but what we're finding is that we have players involved at the central government level, which is the top level, the municipal level, which is the center level, and people working at the grassroots level, all on community safety initiatives. So whether it's really, no matter what it is, you have them working at all these different levels, and they always work independently, and I've never seen them work together before. There's always these huge gaps, and what we've done in Kosovo is focus really hard on making sure the information gets from the grassroots to central government and then back down, and it's been this, and it's been this. So what we did is in 2005, we worked together with players from all over Kosovo, international and national players, and developed a community safety strategy for Kosovo. And the strategy is now being revised because of all the changes in the last 3 years. But what this does is it gives Kosovo a map, a roadmap of how do we work together, how do we ensure that we're effective and we're working efficiently so that all these international and national players aren't duplicating each other. How do we ensure that the right hand knows what the left hand is doing? How do we communicate? And so what we've done is we've developed this whole strategy, which is the overarching who we are in Kosovo in those areas. But the revisions now are going to include national strategies within there. So, because what ends up happening is, even back home, unless you have an institute like the National Crime Prevention Center or the COPS office, the Community Oriented Policing Center, they're creating their own curriculum, they're creating their own problem-solving projects, and they're doing this independently in their own communities. And they're doing that here, just like we did back home. And they don't have this base to draw from. So within this strategy, they'll develop national strategies to impact hooliganism, domestic violence, traffic safety. So anybody at any level who wants to take that on draws from the strategy, is supported by regulation or law or policy, is already backed, it's already an approved thing, and then they modify it for their own community needs, and the implementation would be much better. Really, this is innovative, I think, compared to where we've come from. And there's this community affairs department will be able to better coordinate community policing activities the same way, because they're within this strategy. In fact, the community affairs department is leading the revisions of this strategy. So there's a lot of more information, a lot of players, and it's just too much information this late. But this community safety strategy for a national strategy for a country or a region is, I think, really innovative, and there's some model strategies out there. I'd like to think what ours will be one as well. Maybe our past one was. I don't know. I don't know that it's ever been looked at outside, but certainly Croatia, I think, has written one recently, and a couple other countries where they're really relying on that and being able to implement it at the grassroots level, central government and municipal and grassroots levels.
Now, last section, I'd like to turn to the international community, and there's been a number of different actors here. ECTAP-OSC, that are working hand in hand with it, and the UN International Police as part of the UNMIC mission. Are there some lessons from the way international community works with the local police from your experience or observation?
This is the part where we shut the recorder off. We've all made mistakes, and I think all of us have some merit in the work that we're doing. I'm particularly proud that we have been able to, as an international organization within this arena, been able to stay from start of something and stay with it, and hopefully to fruition. Because the international community, the way it's set up, and it doesn't matter what organization it is, they come and go in 6 months, they rotate before anything's been done, they've collected their paycheck and they go home, and everybody got really geared up and really pumped up and let's do this, and then boom, they got new leaders with new ideas, new this. That's everything from the head of mission to the human rights guy out in the field. Really, this is a problem. I don't know how they get away with it. It's a problem for the country that they're in. It's a problem for the mission. It's a problem for the other players. This is my first mission, but I've been here 5 years. I've seen a lot of people come and go. And I think part of it is that ISATAP has allowed that, OSCE has allowed that. But there's a lot of international players who come in. They don't do the proper analysis. They throw a bunch of money at something. They put a feather in their cap and they go home. So, you know, billions of dollars have come into Kosovo and they still don't have chalk in their schools. This is a problem. And they don't have proper roads or proper electricity. Billions of dollars have gone just into the electrical plant, and it's just bad money after bad, or good money after bad. So the number one issue for me with international, particularly international organizations, is the lack of coordination in efforts, the lack of long-term leadership, in fact, lack of long-term staffing, period. The only constant are the local staff, and they have to go where they're going to get the most pay. Luckily, most of my staff have been with me since 2003, but I'm very lucky. Most of them move on. They go from mission to mission within their own country. Donor coordination, a catastrophe. If there was a clearinghouse just for donor coordination, imagine we would have schools, we would have fire trucks with water in them, we'd have ambulances with defibrillators, but we don't. And I think because of the lack of the coordination of donations. I think recruitment for mission members. I don't want to group up any, it's hard to make generic statements because they're hard to back up, but I'll make some generalizations. Some countries send their most innovative, most motivated, most qualified people to work in the mission to represent their organization or their state or their country. Well, others send them because they can't put them in jail, you know, and we're working side by side. We're working side by side with people from non-democratic countries who are leading, who are the advisors to, like, the police. They're supposed to be teaching them democratic policing. They've never seen democracy in their lives. They've never lived it. They've never worked it. They've never seen it in their countries. This is a problem. So the other problem besides good recruitment, getting the best in the missions, is a problem. But the other is placing people where they're experiences. UNMIC gave community policing excellent people to advise them. None of them had any community policing experience. So they're nice people. We like working with them. But we need people who are experts that can raise up a nation so that, and that's the other thing, is my understanding.